You are listening to Studio 41.
Hello and welcome to Quiz Time India, your very own Desi Quizzing Podcast. And this is your host and quiz master, Aditya. In the week gone by, Nike released an eye-grabbing ad. Mars 2020 Perseverance mission lifted off from the Kennedy Space Center. And most importantly, we have an intro music. Yeah, the one that you're listening to right now. Intro music, OST, background score, call it whatever you want. We have it. The track is called Oh Damn. Oh Damn is by multi-talented Angelique Jacquet. She says she is contemplating putting out an album soon, and dear listeners, you heard it here. So yeah, look out for her work. Now is the time for some quizzing. First up is last week's audience question. Last week's guest was Sandesh Rai, and here is Sandesh Rai's question.
Yeah, so my question for the audience is, on June 23rd, 1927, the Bombay Presidency Radio Club started broadcasting over India Airwaves. This was the start of radio in India. It was later taken over by the government, which led to the eventual formation of All India Radio. Since 1956, it is known by a popular name which literally describes what this service is in Sanskrit. Please tell me what the name I am looking for.
And the answer to Sandesh's question was Akashvani. And among all the people who got it right, Yogesh Prabhu is the one who will be picking up a sweet prize. Your book will be on its way, Yogesh, and if you would like to win a prize like Yogesh, all you have to do is to wait for the audience question at the end of this week's episode and send in your answers to @QuizTimeIndia on Instagram. You can also reach out to us @PodcastStudio41 on Twitter and Instagram and Studio41 on Facebook. Now, for this week's quiz. This week's guest is Omkar. Omkar is from Pune and he works at Choose to Think, that is with a Q. He has been quizzing for 8 years and his areas of interest are food, cooking, science, tech, and Indian classical music. Before we go on to the episode, allow me a moment to tell you that there are moments of pure quizzing in this episode. Omkar was able to crack a business question, a question about business rivalries, by using a childhood lullaby. Yeah, it is that bizarre and it is that awesome. So here is the episode. Once again, welcome to Quiz Time India. Omkar, thank you so much for joining us on Quiz Time India. It's a pleasure having you here.
The pleasure is mine, Aditya. I must say that I've quite enjoyed listening to some of your podcast episodes. I'm excited to be here and I want to see what you send my way.
It's a whole bunch of trivia that I have, whole bunch of trivia, new and old. And let me just tell you about the format. You heard the episodes, previous episodes, so you have an idea. But for those listeners who are joining us for the first time, the format is very simple. You and I will trade questions one by one. I'll start off, since I'm the host, I'll ask you a question. If you get the question, if you know the answer, then that's great, that's awesome. Uh-huh. But if in case you require any hints, you can ask me for hints and I'll give them.
Okay.
And together, by the end of this episode, we all will get to know some new facts. And through us, even our audience will hopefully get to know some new facts, some new trivia, some new food for thought. Does that make sense?
Sounds good. Yeah. I'm looking forward to this. Let's do it.
All right. So the first question that I have for you was in the news quite recently.
Oh, God.
Actually, it's an old story. The old story starts on 29 July 1911.
Okay.
That was the day when Mohun Bagan, the famous Bengali football club, defeated East Yorkshire Regiment in the IFA Shield final.
Uh-huh.
This day is also called as the Mohun Bagan Day.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, there was this IFA Shield. IFA is Indian Football Association. It started sometime in late 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, it was only British teams, which were made up of British regiments, who were playing this tournament, mm-hmm. and they were winning. So in 1911, it was sort of a Lagan moment when an Indian team went on to defeat the Britishers and take the shield, take the IFA shield. It didn't just become a big day for Indian football, but also for the independence movement where Indians thought we can defeat the British.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the story. And this day became known as Mohun Bagan Day. This mm-hmm. year, on 29th of July, an unrelated and an unusual organization in America paid tribute to Mohun Bagan on a billboard. Which organization?
Okay. You've bowled me a googly on the very first question, Aditya.
It's okay. Let's see where your thoughts are going. What line of thought is there? So it's not unusual in the way that I wouldn't relate it to football.
Yeah, so when you say recent news and when you're saying an organization in the US paid tribute to Mohun Bagan, which is a story of how the colonizers were beaten at their own game by the people who they were colonizing, it somehow leads me to think about the Black Lives Matter protests that have been going on, that have been gaining quite some momentum in these past few weeks. So is that, am I anywhere close near where I should be?
That's a really good connect that you have, but unfortunately not right. But I like how you thought on that. I like how you went with that. I really liked that. But that is not, it is an organization based out of New York.
Okay.
I'm calling it an organization for the lack of a better word here. And something, it's based out of New York, and on a giant billboard, they commemorated Mohun Bagan for some reason.
Is this the Indian expats group who have now settled in the US or New York? Something like that?
That could have made sense because, you know, Mohun Bagan is Indian and Indian patriotism is at an all-time high. But, okay, let me just say this. Organization, again, I'm using the word organization loosely, can be found all over the world in different variants. So also, New York billboard, if you could use that anywhere. So every country has a variant of this organization. Again, as I said, the word organization is being used loosely.
So billboard, New York. Organizations being very in a very loose sense of the term. I don't know, something to do with music awards, but I can't quite figure out how that would connect to Mohun Bagan. Did Bappida at some point write a song about Mohun Bagan winning over the British regiment? I think I'm completely lost here.
And that would be good trivia if he did. So, should I tell you the whole thing? It is actually, there is no hint that I can give you. There is no connection between the two organizations, between Mohun Bagan and the...
Okay, please put me out of my misery.
So random. It is the stock exchange, NASDAQ stock exchange, on their billboard at Times Square. Throughout the day, they put Mohun Bagan's logo, Mohun Bagan's color, Mohun Bagan's throughout the day on 29 July 9, 2020. For some reason. So that was the whole thing.
Now the organization bit makes a lot of sense. Oh man,
an organization, it's a stock exchange, right? I actually couldn't even give a hint which could have been like an apt hint. I didn't know how to give a hint for a stock exchange. I tried saying that every country has its own variant, but that was the closest
I
could come
on. I'm surprised I didn't catch on to that. And that made me think of Indian expats living abroad, but then I should have realized that maybe Indian expats are not present in every country of the world.
Yeah.
He actually made me work for it. But very satisfying. Very satisfying. It is a worthy ball to lose your wicket to.
Yeah. That's what the batsman says every time you get out.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do, eh? We need to think about keeping our places in the team.
It's true, true. So I was looking up this IFA shield. As I said, Indian Football Association started in 1893. 1911 is when an Indian team won for the first time. And the thing about it is that post-independence, it kind of became a global league. So not only Indian teams are participating in it, but there has been a club called Pas Tehran FC, which is from Tehran, that is Iran, which almost went on to win the tournament. Then there one club from Korea, North Korea, who participated. One from Armenia, that is when it was Soviet Russia. One from Uruguay called Peñarol FC, which apparently is a multiple time South American champion.
Wow.
And finally, in 2006, Bayern Munich, the Bayern Munich, one of the biggest clubs in the world, their reserve team played in this tournament and they defeated East Bengal in the final. So it is one of the most bizarre things I've heard about Indian football.
I did not know all of these teams came to play. Of course, I knew the fact that Pele had at one point come to India while he was representing the New York Cosmos. And I think Mohan Bagan played them while he was here and they managed to hold them to a draw. Don't quote me on that. My knowledge of sports quizzing is terrible.
So 29 July, that's the story. There's even a website called 29July1911.in. You can find a tiny movie about the match. You can find the whole team list and what all happened in the match. And even something called the Mohan Bagan Ratna. So it's like Bharat Ratna, but Mohan Bagan's own version, which they gave out to footballing players and cricketing celebrities. So that was the story of Mohan Bagan on the NASDAQ billboard.
I'm actually looking forward to what the other questions you have in store for me.
Those will be slightly simple.
Okay, so here goes.
Yeah.
One of my big interests is Indian classical music and the sitar in particular. And we've had a whole host of great sitarists who've toured the world. And it is because of their efforts along with a lot of other musical stalwarts is that Indian classical music became known to the world at large. Right? People like Pandit Ravi Shankar, Ustad Vilayat Khan and Pandit Nikhil Banerjee, to name the most prominent trio of sitarists. My question is about the instrument that connected them all, the sitar. So, if you've seen the sitar, at the very bottom of the instrument is a triangular part made of bone or ivory, which is used to hold one end of all the strings in place. So, a sitar usually has 1, 2, 4 main strings, 3 or 4 drone strings, and some anywhere between 9 to 12 sympathetic strings, which are not played actively. They just resonate with what is being played on the main string. So all of these, so many strings, they are under tension and they are held at one end by this small triangular part made of bone or ivory. Okay, so they are all held in place by this triangular part. It gets its name most likely since it resembles another object. So what is it called?
Okay. So the strings are held together by this triangular object thing structure. And
correct.
That bit gets its name from something else which it resembles.
Correct.
So,
and I'll give you this, that something else that it remembers is also found towards the bottom of a lot of people's person.
Oh, so I'm imagining a sitar player like sitting right now. So, so the bottom bit of a sitar is this, the massive, like this dome kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's right? Called a tumba and it's made out of a hollowed out pumpkin, a wild bitter pumpkin. Yeah.
I've seen some tiny documentary or video of how they make it. So is that the end where the ivory structure is, or is it the other end which is slightly away from the player?
No. It's at the bottom of the tumba. It's at the bottom
of the cone. Just trying to understand. So nothing like a trikon kind of a logic behind it, I'm assuming.
No, not as simple as that. Not as simple as
hint was it is found.
So, this thing which it resembles might be found towards the bottom on people's person. It is something they would have worn.
Oh, is it like a footwear? I don't know, near the feet.
Not that down low.
Or
maybe a little higher.
Something like underwear or
something. You're in the right ballpark. So now think of what kind of underwear looks triangular.
Oh.
Because we are talking about an Indian instrument, this obviously has to have an Indian...
Okay, langot. Like a langot. Is it a langot?
Langot is absolutely right. Well done. This is langot.
Wow! I would have never imagined it. I would have never guessed it, but... Wow, so it's called a langot.
Brilliantly worked out, Aditya. It is called a langot. And I learned how to play sitar for a few years. And when I was just looking up what all of those parts were called, I just found this one random bit called the langot on the Wikipedia page. And I was like, what? Why the hell would something called a langot have anything to do with a musical instrument? And this is what turned up.
Oh, that's interesting. It's made out of...
It's made out of bone usually.
Yeah.
It's made out of bone. So, usually sitar is made out of toon wood or different kinds of seasoned wood. The bottom tumba is made out of a special kind of pumpkin. And the bridge on over which the strings pass, they are usually made out of ivory back in the day. Sometimes it's made out of deer horn or buffalo horn. Sometimes it's made out of rosewood. Also camel bone. The strings usually pass over this bridge. They have a lot of frets on which you can press them to generate different sounds. And at the bottom end of the sitar is where they are all held together in one place by the langot.
I actually came to know about that whole pumpkin thing because of a quiz that I participated in. It was, I think, India Wants to Know host the Zoom quiz. And they had just put out a picture of this pumpkin plantation and asked what is happening in this picture. That's how I got to know that it's pumpkins, hollowed out pumpkins, which make the base of the tumba of the sitar. So yeah, moving on to the next question.
Okay.
So this question starts with the producers at Universal Pictures. Each of them read the book over the course of a single night. And the next morning, they all agreed that this was the most exciting thing that they have ever read.
Okay.
So they, all these producers at Universal Pictures back in the day, read a single book, all of them together over one night. And morning, all of them were blown away. And they were like, this is the best thing we have read. Now, something else. The main theme of this film was a simple alternating pattern of two notes, variously identified as either E and F or F and F sharp, E and F or F and F sharp. And this tiny bit of music became a classic piece of suspense music, synonymous with approaching danger. And the composer described the theme as grinding away at you. And he also went on to describe it as instinctual, relentless, and unstoppable. What movie are we talking about? What book are we talking about?
I think I have some idea of what we are talking about here. I'm not entirely sure about the title of the book, but the movie would be Jaws.
Absolutely.
This is the theme that plays when the shark is approaching.
Yes, absolutely. This is the theme of the movie. It's a very simple theme. As I say, not much in it, but it just catches the suspense quite well.
Composed by John Williams, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, absolutely composed by John Williams. And of course, directed by Steven Spielberg. And it is the theme, if I may say so, that catches a person's attention. Since the shark doesn't appear for most of the movie. It doesn't even make an appearance till most of the movie is over. At least some 45 minutes of the movie is over.
It's so crazy.
It's just
crazy.
The theme which builds up the tension.
Yeah, yeah. Those two tiny bits of music which lead to this building sense of tension and foreboding. And suddenly when it all comes crashing down, the impact is immense.
Yeah, true.
I may have heard this very theme at some point earlier, but I didn't really recognize it as the Jaws theme. But... a year or two back, I was watching this movie called The Holiday, which stars Jack Black, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, and Cameron Diaz. And in that, Jack Black plays a Hollywood music composer, and Kate Winslet plays a reporter from London who's come to holiday to Los Angeles during Christmas break. And they meet and hit it off, obviously, because it's a movie. So he keeps telling her about all of these amazing movie scores that she absolutely has to watch and listen to. And the way you described it is almost exactly the way he describes it in the movie. So when you were actually talking about it, I was like, oh man, wait, I know this, I've heard this at some point. It's at the tip of my tongue. If I just bloody can recall where I've heard this, I'll get the answer.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Great. It's your turn now. Please ask your question. Make it easy, hopefully.
Aditya, before I ask a question, how big of an engineering buff are you?
I cleared engineering in 4.5 years. What does that tell you?
That tells me that you are more of an engineer than most people. You spent half a year extra.
True, I enjoyed it so much that I gave half an year extra. Yes. Please go on.
Okay. I think you'll appreciate this one regardless. Okay, so there's this British mechanical engineer called Sir Christopher Cockerill.
Mm-hmm.
And he discovered a principle while he was fiddling around with two concentric tin cans. One was a coffee can and the other one was a cat food can. And he was playing around with them and a hairdryer. So what he discovered, he called it a momentum curtain, the effect. He would later go on to successfully put a skirt around it. And he tried to present it to the armed forces, the military, but they were not having any of it. He conducted a few demonstrations, but the military just seemed to not be very interested in what he was trying to get funding for.
Yeah. What did he put around it?
A skirt, like the piece of clothing, a skirt. So what he built finds use now, not only for military applications, but also in disaster relief, in surveying and in transportation. So what is he credited with developing the modern version of?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Christopher Cockerill is the name, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So Christopher Cockerill.
He took two tin cans, a coffee and a cat food can, and he had a blow dryer.
Yeah, a hair dryer, a blow dryer.
And then he put a hair dryer, yeah. And then he put a skirt around it. What can you... When you said the two tin cans, my first thought was maybe something to do with, you know, that whole put a thread and you can speak, the vibrations going around, but I don't think that is what it is. Then you said hair dryer and a skirt. I thought of Marilyn Monroe, but I don't think it's there either.
I like how your mind
now
works.
What connects the two? That's why it took me 4.5 years to complete in engineering. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can see you've totally enjoyed it.
So it's still in use. It's used in disaster relief. It is used in... what else?
Transportation. It's used for transportation. I think they use it to transport people and cars across the English Channel sometimes.
Oh.
It's also in use by the militaries across the world because they can use it to navigate various kinds of terrain.
So is it an actual... From what you said, I'm gathering that it's an actual vehicle of sorts. It's not a principle that we're talking about. It's an actual thing on which people travel. Is that right?
Correct. It's an actual vehicle. It's an actual vehicle. And the principle, which he called the momentum curtain, is what forms the fundamental basis of this vehicle's operation. So now think about principle.
A momentum curtain.
Yeah, but think about what he was fiddling around with when he discovered it.
Did the blow dryer sort of work as a propeller of sorts? Pushing the tin cans forward?
Sort of, yes. Sort of.
I wonder what it could be. It's, again, a momentum curtain, he called it. What could it be? Is there any hint which is possible?
Yeah, so the hint is that it is... this vehicle, it can be used over land, it can be used over water, it can be used over marshy terrain.
So in that sense,
it is an all-terrain vehicle.
Yeah, I thought of it. I don't remember the name. It's called...
Let me try giving you another hint. It is like a dainty Disney princess in some sort, because it does not really touch the surface it's walking on. It just glides above it very gracefully.
Hovercraft.
Absolutely right. This is indeed the hovercraft.
Oh,
and the rubber thing that seems to be going around it, that is called the skirt.
Ah, oh wow.
because that is what keeps the curtain of air which keeps it afloat protected.
Oh, I've actually not given much thought to a hovercraft. How it does it actually hover? Like, does it stay elevated
absolutely,
or something?
Yes.
Or
it is. It is.
Ah, I've actually. Oh, another thing that I learned today. Some great questions, yeah. Where are you getting these questions from? You should join hands with me. We should host this podcast together. So are you ready for your next question?
Yes, sir. Bring it on.
Navneet. Okay, I'm going on a limb here. I'm giving you a big hint in the beginning itself. If you get this, Okay. Then rest of the question is quite easy. Navneet
Okay. Is
apparently the Sanskrit name for this product. Now comes the question. So the story is that British Army realized that its troops needed this product and built the basic infrastructure required for it.
Okay.
Kaira is a district of what is now Gujarat. And Gujarat was one such place where Okay. This basic infrastructure was developed. Now from Gujarat, we move to Bombay. A young Parsi named Pestinji Edulji Dalal, age 13, he was quite young, 13-year-old. The year was 1888, by the way. He was 13-year-old and he realized the need for this product. So, Pestinji, who had adopted this nickname Polly, since it sounded more British, what he did, he procured the raw ingredients from Kaira and manufactured the product under the brand name Paulson. Because his name was Polly, so he made it Paulson.
To make it sound a little more formal, substantial.
Yeah. And then he used the Indian Railways to send his product all across the country. And within no time, he developed a monopoly in the market on this product. But he had one problem. That the raw materials that he used to get used to be unrefrigerated for days. And that used to give the product a real distinct flavor. Many years later, one of post-independence India's biggest success stories replaced Paulson from the market as the market leader. But by then, the market, which is us Indians, we were so used to Paulson's distinct flavor that this overtaker also had to make a change to their product so that it was similar to Paulson's. What am I talking about? Who replaced Paulson's? And what was so distinct about Paulson's? What is all this story about? And obviously you have the hint which I gave in the beginning that Navneet is the Sanskrit name for this product.
Right, right. So,
yes.
When you just said Navneet to begin with and you said, I'm giving you a big hint there and the my mind just started racing in all sorts of directions thinking, isn't Dev Anand's film production company called Navneet or... I'm mistaking it for something. Oh my god. Yeah, see, I've got the first two letters right. I'll take credit for that.
Yeah. But then there's this whole story of Parsi boy called
There's this whole story Polly. Of Parsi boy called Polly or Pestinji Edulji.
Pestinji Edulji Dalal.
Pestinji Edulji Dalal. And he goes on to found Paulson's, who gets his raw product from Kaira in Gujarat. And becomes the market leader. But the post-independence success story replaces him, but has to make a change in their own product because people love Paulson's. They've grown used to Paulson's at that point.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. I'm not going to lie, your hint saying Sanskrit name for this product helped big time. I don't know a lot of Sanskrit, but I know some Marathi music. Some Marathi music. And in one of those songs, one of those classic songs which I grew up listening to, my mother used to sing this. It goes something like Parabrahma Nishkam Toha Gauli Ancha Ghari Vakya Vale Andu Krishna Navneet Chori. Which something...
I think you're on the right track. With my rudimentary Marathi, I think you're on the right track.
Yeah, so it sort of translates as the Lord has taken birth at the house of a milkmaid or at the house of a cowherd. And while adorned in bracelets and anklets, he goes about stealing butter.
Yes.
So when you said Navneet is the Sanskrit name for this product, I immediately went back down that memory lane and went, oh yeah, this has got to be something to do with butter. So I'm going to go out on a slight limb and say, Paulsons was the market leader in butter, but because he used to get unrefrigerated milk and cream from Gujarat, it sort of became sour, and as a result, maybe people didn't like the sour rancid taste, so he had to do something. And Amul had to replicate that, is what you said, right?
So you were right. So it is a story about butter, and since he couldn't keep it refrigerated, so it used to turn a bit sour, and people across the country got used to that sourness. Now when Amul made their butter, it was fresh, but people still craved that sourness, not the sourness but the taste of it. So Amul, to replicate that, made butter, salted butter, which is why the Amul is slightly salty in taste, because that is the kind of taste which Paulsons had. Otherwise, across the world, if you see, we get unsalted butter. But here in India, salted butter. Butter is Amul. And the reason is because Paulson ka butter kharab ho jata tha. And to replicate that, the taste has still stayed with us for some reason. But it is that was the whole story of it.
Quite interesting.
Yeah, it's like...
quite interesting. As in, just because people are used to something, someone who has actually developed a better supply chain, a better refrigerated supply chain...
a better quality product, essentially.
Yeah, a better quality product, essentially. Absolutely right. You have to sort of mimic what the person who came before you was doing, because that is what people have grown up eating. That's what people crave. That is what people want.
Exactly.
It's a classic example of the demand dictating the product.
If there ever could be. That is absolutely right. And even till this day, I mean, Pestanji's and Paulsons are nowhere, but the legacy continues. The fact that we are still having Amul butter, the salty butter, as our default de facto butter.
Okay, I think I've got something to follow it up very nicely. This question is about Indian food. According to food writer Vikram Doctor, one reason for a particular characteristic of Indian cooking is the fact that coal was not available to the general populace until the 18th century. So obviously, cooking gas came much, much later, and the supply even then was not very reliable. Coal came around the 18th century when deposits in the northeast started to be mined. But until then, and even after that, a more commonly available source of fuel was used, which led to the widespread use of a certain cooking technique almost universally across India. So, what cooking technique are we talking about?
So, coal is not in the picture. Obviously, there's no petroleum or natural gas products. So, I can only think of two things that are used for cooking. One is wood, and the other would be using dung, cow dung, or things like that. They used to make cakes of cow dung and burn those. Again, high source of carbon, I'm imagining. So is it... okay, tell me, is it to do with the... not the ingredient, the material used, or is it the equipment used that we are looking at?
So it is more... obviously, there is some element of the equipment that is used. You'd use both of these fuels in a traditional clay chulha, because that was the method of cooking for most families across the country. But from a cooking technique point of view, it also led to a certain style of cooking. For example, if you look at say a Western grill house or a Western steak house, you would have this very nicely caramelized steak, very nicely seared steak, and then it is subject to various surfaces, various cooking temperatures, various cooking times. So all of that combines to give you that superbly caramelized crust and medium rare interior and a lot of flavor. So similarly in India, from a cooking technique point of view, this availability of cow dung as fuel led to a common characteristic in the way we cook food. So what are we talking about?
From the top of my head, there's only one word going around, which is tadka, but I don't think that fits.
No, that's not what we're looking at. So just think about how the cow dung cakes would burn, right? And compare it with how, say, coal would burn. People could have perhaps made charcoal out of wood to use for cooking, but making charcoal is time consuming, and if they were making charcoal, maybe they could have used it for other applications which required higher heating, such as metalworking, such as blacksmithing.
Yeah.
So instead, they opted to use cow dung, which does not burn as hot as coal.
Mm.
So as a result, we have something which is quite common in Indian food.
What do we do which uses less heat? What could it be? I'm curious also though. What could it be? I'm thinking into type of vessels we use. I'm thinking, maybe is it like something like a biryani, like a one pot thing where we just make everything in one? Is it a khichdi?
So a khichdi definitely would fall under this category of dishes that utilize the sort of technique, cooking technique that we are talking about here. Khichdi, even biryani.
Hmm. Dum. Dum.
So, I think I'll give it to you at this point because you're almost there and there is no one specific exact correct answer. So what this boils down to is that because cow dung burns at a low sort of a flame, low steady sort of a heat, we don't have very rapid cooking in India. We usually tend to have slow and low cooking over low heat for longer durations. And essentially, all of this happens by boiling or simmering inside a pot. So if you think about dishes like, say, haleem or dum biryani, all of these are, a lot of the times they are cooked overnight, over dying embers or coal. So that even if you don't have a very high energy dense fuel like coal, you can still manage to cook it such that it is really tender and juicy and flavorful while making use of the fuel that you have.
All right. So my last question for today, my last question for today is a very common thing that we are talking about. So it starts with Nils Bohlin. That is N-I-L-S B-O-H-L-I-N, a Swedish mechanical engineer. He worked at Volvo from a long time, from 1958 to 1985.
Okay.
Prior to working at Volvo, he worked at Saab, that is S-A-A-B, as an aircraft designer. And he helped design ejection seats for fighter aircrafts.
Okay.
That was his previous profile. Now, at Volvo, he was responsible for the development of a special project.
Okay.
For which Volvo received a patent number, which is 343,625. That's just additional information. Although Volvo could have made millions of dollars from this patent, they opened the patent for public use.
Okay.
They felt that this invention was too significant and that it had more value than the profit that it would have generated. What is this invention? What is this patent behind which is Nils Bohlin, the Swedish mechanical engineer?
Okay, so I know that Volvo as a brand of automobiles is very well known for its safety. For its safety features. So just tell me if this has anything to do with that ballpark, or if I should, if I'm completely off track here.
Absolutely in the right area.
Okay. So a few things come to mind. It could either be anti-lock, like anti-skid braking, or it could be your crumple zones when cars actually crash into each other, so that that specific zone of the car crashes and the passengers are saved, or airbags. Oh, wait. What did you say the time was?
He worked at Volvo from 1958 to 85.
Okay. I don't know if any of my guesses actually would make sense from a timeline perspective, but okay, let me go ahead with the airbags. He developed airbags for the company. And his experience of working with...
It wasn't airbags.
Oh, so I was working off the fact that he designed ejector seats for planes.
No, it wasn't airbags though.
Okay, so the only other guess, which I'm now sort of checking myself for not going with in the first place, is seat belts then. Is it that?
It is actually seat belts.
Oh, damn.
And the thing is, it is... Sort of seat belts. So seat belts were invented much earlier. Seat belts were invented much earlier, but Nils Bohlin did a change to it, or an improvement. Can you tell me what improvement it was? Let's make a question inside a question.
this would be the three-point seat belt, which we now find in almost all cars everywhere.
Exactly, brilliant. That is the three-point seat belt that he came up with, and that was the one for which they received, Volvo received patent number 343,625, and they made it open to public for use and didn't make much money but saved a whole lot of lives.
Wow, well, brilliant. Brilliant. So I two related tangents, if I may indulge in some tangential thinking here. What I came across while reading about safety measures and risk and minimizing risk recently was that once all of these safety measures become available, as newer and better safety measures become available, people tend to become a little more reckless with their driving. Because earlier, when you didn't have seat belts, people knew that if they crashed, they would lose their life for certain. But now that we have airbags and seat belts, that sort of gives people a false sense of security, and it normalizes risk taking, which is why we see slightly riskier driving. So even if cars on average have become safer, driving practices may not have become so. That is one thing that I found quite interesting about that line of thinking. The other thing was, when you said,
is there some research done on that?
I think there is. So the popular anecdote goes that if you want people to drive very, very carefully, instead of giving them all of these seat belts and safety equipment, you should just put a sharp spike in the middle of the steering wheel. And that will ensure they corner very carefully. They don't brake too hard. They don't drive too fast because they can see death staring them in the face.
No one would want to risk that. Yeah.
And the other tangent was, I think about a year and a half back, Tesla made all of its patents related to electrical drives and electrical systems open to anyone who wanted to use them, in a post that said, all our patents are belong to you.
Correct. I remember reading about that. Elon Musk had, and since he's been supporting open source and everything, and suddenly this guy comes out with all the patents are for public use.
Yeah. So the story of Volvo also making this patent free for everyone reminded me of.
So, well done. You got it right. Three-point seat belt is what it was. All right. So, on that note comes the time for your final question. And this one is for our audience. So, as is the tradition, as the ritual, you ask a question and the audience members can listen to the question and then they can send in their replies to us @QuizTimeIndia on Instagram. That is the main account, @QuizTimeIndia. That is for the podcast. And then there is other accounts, which is @PodcastStudio41, which is on Twitter and Instagram. And finally, Studio 41 on Facebook. So, Omkar, please take it away. Tell us what your question is.
Okay, because we've been talking about cars for a little while, I think it makes sense for me to ask this question and end on this note. So, the James Bond film Casino Royale features a scene where James Bond is trying to follow the villain who's called Le Chiffre, okay? And in one scene, he glances at his Sony Ericsson phone, his huge product placement back in the very blatant product placement back in the day, but he glances at his Sony Ericsson phone. And on the screen, he can see a pointed icon that shows in which direction he is heading. And also an interactive map to give him some sense of bearing, to give him some sense of where his destination is. So, a fellow by the name of Garrett Camp watched this and it stuck with him. A few years later, he would remember this while thinking of his travel woes while he was living in San Francisco. Okay? All of this, put all of this together, led to the birth of something that a lot of us may have made use of. So, what did it lead to the birth of?
So, I'll just repeat all the facts. You can tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
One guy called Garrett, if I'm not mistaken. Garrett Camp.
Correct.
Garrett Camp was watching Casino Royale. He saw James Bond takes out his Sony Ericsson phone and he gets a sort of like a map of where he is and where his car is possibly, and Garrett gets an idea. Garrett is from San Francisco, and Garrett develops something which all of us might have used at some point or the other.
Correct.
And that was this week's question. If you think you know the answer, all you have to do is hit us up on Instagram, that is @QuizTimeIndia, or you can also reach out to our other account on Instagram, same handle on Twitter, @PodcastStudio41, or on Facebook, which is Studio 41. These are the ways in which you can get hold of us and win yourself a sweet prize, which, of course, is a book. So that's all for now. This is me, Aditya, signing off. Thank you for your time. You can thank me for mine. Goodbye.